Hello and welcome to today's show. This is going to be really interesting because a lot of people ask me, as a canine bite behaviorist and an equine and feline behaviorist, hey Janice, tell me a little bit about what is people food? Because everybody tells me all those dog trainers and the wannabe dog trainers and the vets, and everybody says, don't give your dog people food. Well, do you ever look in a bag of dog food ingredients and look at it and say, well, gee, there's chicken in it, and there's rice in it, and there's oatmeal in it, and there's quinoa in some of them, or if the cheap garbage ones, there's corn in it, there's wheat, there's soy, because we don't want to avoid those three ingredients. But wait a minute. When I have dinner and I have, like, chicken at a barbecue and an ear of corn, or have chicken and I have rice or quinoa or edamame, which is soybeans, isn't that people food? Because I'm a people and I eat that. Well, they don't really understand what that means, because people food is pretty much anything we can shove into our faces, right? Well, same thing with dogs. Anything they can shove into their face is food. But the people food concept is just one that is so misunderstood. And especially new pet owners, oh my goodness. Or if you're a cat person, please, cats cannot be vegan or vegetarian. They just can't. So they can't process the fruits and vegetables and things like that that we can process. They're carnivores, right? Like dogs are carnivores. So especially for a cat, you have to give it meat, right? Well, dogs, very similarly, every organism and every species has its own nutritional requirements, even to the point that if you have an exotic animal like a bearded dragon or a lizard or a bird or a frog or a whatever you've got, those animals have different nutritional needs. Well, dogs have similar nutritional needs where they need meats and things. Now, it doesn't mean that they can't eat or don't eat fruits or vegetables or grasses and grains, because when an animal eats something, let's say a bunny, because bunnies only eat vegetables and fruit and grasses and grains, right? So when a bunny eats those things and it's in the bunny's stomach, and a wild dog or your ill-behaved dog that probably needs to come to me for behavioral modification decides it's going to kill that bunny, the first thing that dogs go for, or wolves, anything pretty much in the wild, is the, as they say in the Deep South, the innards, which means they're going in for the stomach, the intestines. They go for that part first. And why? Well, nature and evolution has taught them and has created the situation where they go in for the things that have the most nutrition the quickest, right? If you think about how easy it is to eat or munch on something that's already been digested, that's soft, kind of like pudding, if you would, as gross as it sounds, this could be a new dieting manner or method. Just listen to the show when we're doing this one, and then you won't want to eat anything. But think about eating chocolate pudding or some kind of a softer, soupy kind of thing versus having to chew on a piece of raw meat. Well, this is getting gross, but it's a lot easier to eat something that's already digested, and they get the nutrients. Well, what is in a bunny's stomach or a deer's stomach or pretty much any prey animal stomach? Grains, grasses, fruits, vegetables. So what happens is they can naturally assimilate those things that have already been broken down. But dogs, cats, they don't have the enzymes in their bodies because they don't need it, because they're not supposed to be eating fruits and vegetables. So they tend to go for animals or sources that are already broken down. And that's why once the animal who's the herbivore, the prey animal who only eats fruits and vegetables, once that animal's stomach and intestines start digesting that food, now your prey animal, or your predator, I should say, your predator can absorb all of the nutrients from the prey animal's digested food. So that's why that happens. I know it sounds absolutely crazy, but that's why that happens. So now, what is people food? Now, people food is the same thing as dog food. It's just in a different form. And when most people, and that's the dangerous thing to start saying the words people or most people or many people, because we know people, as my dad used to say, people, period. So with people food, what happens is it's not necessarily what you're feeding, although we're going to go into that today. Very often, it's where you're feeding that from. So if you're feeding your animal in his bowl and you're giving him chopped up chicken, chances are pretty good that he's going to like that, but he's not going to start begging for it from the table because he's not associating the food, the people food, with the table. However, if you were to take your dog's kibble or whatever you're feeding him, and raw is certainly people food, if you're taking that food and you're feeding it from the table, you're going to have more behavioral issues because the dog is now associating eating food, whatever it is, from the table. Now, the other part of that is if you, and we're going to get into this in a moment, is dogs that are finicky. And I've been having a lot of patients, like probably a third of my patients have come in with eating disorders that have popped up lately. And it's pretty common. And we're going to go into that in a moment. People food. People food. So is chicken people food or dog food? Well, Janice, of course, that's people food. Oh, so there's no chicken in your dog's dog food? Oh, okay, well, carrots. There's carrots in people food, right? That's people food and bunny food. Well, there's carrots in dog food, a lot of the good ones, right? Well, how about rice? Rice, that's a people food. It's also pet food, dog food. So, yeah, people food is the same. I mean, we eat everything. So if you said, okay, people don't eat trees, but a woodpecker eats a tree, it's not necessarily eating the tree, but we'll leave that one for now. If they were, let's say, eating a tree, then a tree would not be people food, but it would be a woodpecker food. Again, I understand that's not why they necessarily do that, but okay. So anything that people eat is typically something that pets can eat, might be eating in their food or their treats, or that they should be eating. Remember, everybody always talks about varying your diet so that you're getting a lot of nutrition, you're getting a lot of good, healthy ingredients. So you don't want to eat the same thing over and over again. I know my husband's nephew used to eat only peanut butter sandwiches for years. And, you know, that's great. He grew up to be a very big guy. But, you know, you can't survive on that. Yes, you can. But you need to have nutrients and vitamins and minerals. And if you don't have all of those, will you grow? Yeah, you'll grow. But your body needs so many different nutrients and micronutrients that if you don't vary your diet like you do with a dog or have some kind of really good quality vitamin and supplement, nutritional supplement, your body may not be getting everything it needs. And yes, your body can make a lot of things from other ingredients, but, you know, kind of synthesizing your own versus having it as a readily available nutrient is different. You know, you're always best to help your body. It's like putting good quality gasoline in your car, but making sure that your oil is changed and that your radiator fluids, your antifreeze is good, and making sure you have enough windshield wiper fluid and all those things. It's a car is the same thing as a body. It's just one that, you know, we can kind of keep alive for a longer time than our own bodies, although I think right now our human bodies, the doctors have kept us and pharma companies have managed to keep us alive for longer than the average car, but it remains the same concept. So if you're not taking a multivitamin, something good, a good quality supplement, and you're not eating right, you're going to have more, tend to be more hungry. You're going to tend maybe to be a little tired. You'll tend to not feel well. You might become irritable. All of those for a person, okay, so I'm not going to date or marry that person. But when you have a dog or you have a pet that's not behaving right, a lot of times it can be linked to nutrition. So if, let's say, you're on a vitamin supplement like what I use for all my dogs, and I've also used for our barn cat, we have used this for, I'd say it's probably 20 years by now. It's called Nuvet, N-U-V-E-T. It's Nuvet.com, N-U-V-E-T.com. They have like amazing products. Like, I literally could show you my cabinets. We have boxes of these things, the vitamins, the joint supplements, which are amazing. And then they have even shampoos and things like natural. I just love the whole line. But I use those vitamins for my dogs and for our cat, and I've recommended them for years because I believe in them. If you have an animal, whether it's a cat or a dog, that is kind of just looking for every bit of food it possibly can, it's eating inappropriate things, it's trying to reach, you know, up on shelves and the countertops and all, counter surfing or digging in, like a lot of times they dig into your couch cushions in your den or wherever you watch TV and you're eating your chips, and they tear up your, I'm sure a lot of heads are nodding right now and somebody's going, honey, guess why our dog keeps ripping up the couch cushions? Okay, this is why. The reason that they're doing that is they're looking for those food items. It might be just like somebody said to me, well, Janice, you're wrong because my dog eats my remote control. And I said, and when you're watching football on Sundays and Mondays and eating your wings or whatever you're eating, you mean you're not touching your remote? It still smells like the chicken wings you were eating. It still smells like the potato chips you were eating. It may be made out of plastic, but it's the same thing as, you know, a dog licking out a bowl to get every last drop. Yes, they can smell that and they can taste that. So if your dog is doing things like that, you need to get them on some kind of a good vitamin supplement. There are others that are decent, but I've tried literally every one. I love the Nuvet. It's Nuvet.com, and you can tell them you heard about it on our show. But I have been using this stuff for 20-plus years. As pretty much about 6 months after the company came out, I started using it. So that gives you an idea of what a great product it is. But that's even something that if you are you know, thinking about, like, wow, my dog isn't eating things, well, try the Nuvet. And actually, my assistant just handed me something here. There's a discount code that you can get 15% off. There's a number, Nuvet.com, and the number, the discount code is 86686. That's 86686. And their phone number is, here it is, 800-474-7044. And it's 86686. Okay. Thank you so much, Amanda. Appreciate it. All right. So let's go back to people food. If you're giving your dog a kibble, kibble is fine. There's nothing wrong with it. You have companies like the Farmers something or other, I won't say the whole name, which we've had so many dogs come to us on that, and it takes us 2 to 3 times on the sanitary cycle to clean out the containers of the sludge and grease, petroleum-looking stuff that's in that food. That the residue is. So I will not use that. There are some good freeze-dried. One I do like is the Dr. Marty's line. I actually know Dr. Marty. He's excellent, and he does put out a very good product. I do like that. There are some very, very good family-owned companies that put out great products. Pretty much think about the food. It's not just what is in the bag. It's where did they source it? Where did they get it from? So if you're saying, like, oh, yeah, I want to give my dog, you know, this and that, okay, that's perfect. But if they're getting it from a very low-quality source, they're getting animals that are downed, or meaning they're already dead or they're ill, some dog foods, where do you think? It can't be used for humans, right? They put it in dog food. So you don't want to get, you know, Acme, I'm not saying Acme the store, but just the joke about Acme, like the Roadrunner, the Acme brand, or the, you know, cheapo, El Cheapo brand of whatever it is. you want to get a better quality. So there are a lot of really good ones. We're going to go into that in a future show, so just keep your eyes open for that. But, you know, the key is here that people food is okay because it's already in your dog food. But if you can do anything, the key is to get rid of the ingredients that are bad for your dog. And some of those ingredients that you should be watching out for are things like corn, wheat, and soy, BHA, BHT, which are chemical preservatives added to extend the shelf life of foods for like ever. And do we know what they do? They are carcinogenic and tumorigenic. So they cause cancers and tumors. So why would we give our dogs that? And then another one, propylene glycol, which is a component of antifreeze. Propylene and ethylene glycol are components of antifreeze. That's why your dog wants to lick the driveway of the antifreeze. So we really want to make sure that we're not giving our dogs constantly over time. And like I said, we'll do this in a future show. We've done it many times in the past, but it's definitely a fan favorite, and everybody always reaches out and emails and says, oh, my gosh, thank you, Janice. I didn't know how bad this food that I was using is. The great thing about it is that people food, if you can include some whole meats and whole proteins, you'll actually do your dog a favor, because one of the big complaints that everyone says with, you know, all of these raw and everything else, well, you know, if you got little kids, I strongly caution you to research. Because Listeria and Salmonella and so many other disgusting bugs, even, you know, like E. coli, can survive even cooking up to like 164 degrees. So if they don't cook your product, or if you're not cooking your product to at least 165 degrees, you're putting your kids potentially at risk. Your dog will be okay because, like, dogs can eat poop, right? Dogs can eat anything. Some of them get sick. Most of them don't. But if you have little kids and they're running around and you're giving your dog raw meat, and I'm not talking about at the butcher, but you still have to be careful. But some of these companies that, you know, send stuff to you and, you know, or you defrost it, it gets all over the place and your child, you know, touches it and then touches their mouth, or the dog licks them on the mouth, or licks them anywhere, now your child can get sick. So I would really caution people, just do your research. Don't just look at the TV commercials, because remember, those are advertising. And I always say the more money that has to be spent on the outside of the bag, making it look pretty, making everybody go, oh, I want to buy that brand. Look how cute. That's the same kind of dog I have. Most of the time, these companies that are making, it's just marketing. It is literally marketing. They stick a Vizsla on there in case you have a Vizsla. They stick, now everything is a doodle, they stick a doodle on there, and people go, oh, look, it's special food for doodles. Well, a doodle, if you have a poodle mix, which is what they are, if you have a poodle mix and it's mixed with Bernese Mountain Dog versus Shetland Sheepdog versus German Shepherd versus Chihuahua, that's a scary thought, whatever that is, that it comes out looking like, those dogs don't have the same nutritional needs. So you can't say even within a breed, you can say within generally, but you shouldn't be looking at the outside of a bag of food or going, oh, look, they have a boxer, or they have a pit bull on there. So, oh, it must be good. Oh, I'm going to buy it because I have a pit bull, because that's marketing. So a big problem with things, I believe, is people just are, I don't know, ignorant. People are looking at things like children would look in a window and go, oh, I want that snow globe. And then they take it and try to bounce it like a ball and the globe breaks. I kind of feel like that's what adults do. We just don't think anymore. We're taught as children to think and be adults, and then adults, we're the other way around. So as far as pros of giving, quote unquote, people food, all right, a pro of giving people food is generally you're buying it. It's USDA approved. It is checked. It is marketed. It's for human consumption. So if it's for human consumption, you have less worry about downed animals, or you should have no concern. But We know how businesses are, but you should have less concern about there being a downed animal, an ill animal, something that was, not fit for human consumption. So always try to find a good company. And there are even some of the big box stores have really good brands that they just make a lot of it. So that's why it's less expensive. There are some really good brands. You don't have to go spend $150 on a bag of dog food. You can get for $30, $40 for a 40-pound bag of dog food, a 35-pound bag of dog food. It's a good dog food you can find at one of the box stores for about between $1 and $1.25 a pound. The stuff that I use is about $2.20 a pound. But again, my dogs are my priority. I don't care. I'd rather, eat little less quality for myself, but my animals and all of our service dogs in training, they're going to get the best. They're all on the NuVet vitamins. They're all on the, probiotics. A nice thing that you can do, which is super, super helpful in this, especially in this weather, is using a prebiotic or probiotic, and those tend to be a little expensive. So if you didn't want to spend the money on that, you can also use a little bit of either goat's milk yogurt if your dog has a little bit of a sensitive stomach, or you can try just regular yogurt, like a Greek yogurt or something, but please get organic. And if you're spending, let's say, $5 for a quart of plain whole milk yogurt, you might only need a teaspoon in your dog's food, if it's a medium-sized dog, per meal. And it's going to derive a lot of benefit from that. But the nice thing is it's $5. It's going to last you a month. So it's not expensive to do things the right way. So we're going to actually take a very, very quick break for our sponsors, and then we'll be right back with finicky eaters and how we can help our animals who are a little bit fussy with this weather. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to our show. It is the Pet Savant Unleashed. So, as promised, we're going to talk about finicky eaters and how finicky eaters can sometimes be finicky and sometimes be totally fine. We all know that the summers, especially a really hot, humid day, we don't really want to eat. Even people who overeat tend to overeat less on days that are very hot and humid, especially if you're outside at all. It's just nature, right? It's the way it is. It makes us lazy. It makes us sleepy. We tend to not eat quite as much unless you're, drinking a lot at a party or something. But animals go through that too. And I've had, oh my gosh, dozens and dozens of patients in the last month, really starting the end of June, beginning of July. And we've seen this over and over again. Every year it happens, or a lot of times people who are in Florida or really warm, sticky, kind of humid environments where they say, my dog is just, it's fine for months, and then it gets real finicky. Now, there are different aspects to why an animal can become finicky. So it can be, and we're going to talk about this first, a physical issue. If you have a dog who has never, never, never had a problem eating, and your dog is 7, 8, 9, 10, 12, whatever years old, first thing I would do is make sure that you have a visit to your vet, because you need to get a baseline. People don't do this and then they wonder. We get baselines. Right? You go for your physical every year. Maybe the doctor doesn't do an x-ray every year because that's exposing you to unnecessary radiation, but they usually do blood work, right? Now, what does blood work tell us? Does it tell us everything? Of course not. But it gives us a baseline of how the body is processing life and reacting to life. And if your body is changing, either in, let's say, your kidney values, your liver values, your white blood cells, red blood cells, whatever, you have a snapshot at that point in time of what and where you are. Now, I'm going to just mention here, please, if you get results back, what either yourself or with your dog, most laboratories, at least the good ones, if your numbers are way off, like let's say you're at something that should be, you know, let's say it's supposed to be between 5 and 10, and it's at 200, a good laboratory will just rerun the numbers because they want to make sure that that's not just error from the testing. And even the facility that you use, your vet hospital, they have to very often centrifuge samples down. If they don't do it quickly enough, you can get issues like platelets clotting and some of the numbers and values changing before they send it off to the lab. So you want to make sure that your laboratory that your vet is using, or if they're doing it in-house, just you want to make sure if it's taking too much time and they're doing it in-house, they should have it within a half hour to an hour. If it's taking, you know, oh, we'll get it to the next day on an in-house, it means they're not running them right away. So you want to just make sure that the blood, the levels look good. Now, if you have a baseline of your dog, and maybe you don't have to do it every single year, but certainly it's good to have it, let's say, at a year. It's also great to get maybe at 3 to 5 years. My suggestion, although I do redo every dog every year, my suggestion is to do it every other year. So if you do it at 1 year, then do it at 3, 5, 7, 9. Because this way you can see emerging patterns. Sometimes you can stave off something even as serious as cancer. If an animal has a kidney issue or a liver issue, there are supplements you can give. There may be a particular food that's a problem. If your dog suddenly develops a heart murmur or has a physical issue, that can mean that, hey, you're feeding it something, especially the grain-free, which I'm just going to touch on for a moment. The grain-free foods, your dog should not be eating tons of legumes and beans and chickpeas and things like that, because some dogs, not every dog, not most dogs, but some dogs, and we don't want it to be your particular dog, some dogs can get a condition called dilated cardiomyopathy, which is DCM. DCM can be caused or exacerbated by things like lentils, chickpeas, things like that, that, you know, again, people food, but they're not good for dogs, definitely not good for dogs. If you'd have a dog who has, let's say, dilated cardiomyopathy or has potential, let's say, some of the, like, you know, things like Cavalier King Charles and some of the Bostons and the Frenchies, some of the breeds that tend to have, or individuals that tend to have issues with their heart, you don't want them on a grain-free diet, even though it's a dog diet, right? It's dog food. You don't want them on a grain-free diet because that can exacerbate it. So it's like certain of the flea and tick products that are either edibles or topicals. Some of them are contraindicated for dogs who have a predisposition or a history of seizures. So same thing as that. So you really just have to be very aware of what the needs of your dog and how not to add additional complicating factors in there that could potentially cause your dog issues. Now, as promised, finicky eaters. Okay, so a finicky eater, what does that mean when a dog is finicky? Is it from a physical cause, like I just mentioned? Is it from the fact that the dog has maybe a bad tooth? Maybe it has teething issues. Maybe it has an issue in its gums. Maybe it has, you know, a jaw issue. Maybe it's got an issue with its belly that it doesn't feel well. You know, that's where we said the probiotics could help. All of these things and all of this, even, you know, joint pain, if an animal's in pain, it's going to tend to not want to eat, right? It's going to tend to want to avoid pain. So if a dog has, let's say, a vertebra that's out in its neck, it may not eat, not because it doesn't want to eat, but because it can't chew without pain or it can't put its head down. You may see your dog start having other issues, not just with finicky either, but also something like a perhaps a, you know, if it's got the pain, it's in pain. I mean, when we're in pain, we don't want to eat, right? So you can see that obviously a lot of the main issues that can happen here with any kind of animal, they're the same things that can happen to us, right? How many times do babies just scream for what we see as no reason at all? Well, they're teething. It hurts, or their belly hurts. They don't want to eat, or they're screaming. Same thing with dogs. But we as humans tend to forget that dogs can have the same basic issues as we can. So for a finicky eater, something that's due to the weather, what you can do to help that is instead of feeding them, when it's hot out, like giving them a meal at, 10 o'clock when it's already gotten warm in the morning, you can feed them a little bit earlier before they, maybe they go outside, they come in right away, you go to the bathroom, they come back in, and, feed them right away. Some veterinarians, and I'm definitely one of the proponents of this, if a dog is building up a pattern of behavior where it's not eating all the time, and you're talking about weeks or months, and you go to the veterinarian and the dog is checked out, there are things that veterinarians will prescribe for your pet, such as Pepcid AC, which is very innocuous. It's if the dog is anxious in the middle of the night, or if the dog has separation anxiety, very often once you start your pattern in the morning and you start going to, let's say, getting ready for work or whatever, or for getting kids ready for school, all of a sudden the dog gets stressed and now he doesn't want to eat because his stomach acid is all over the place. And now if he won't eat, it could be because he's just got acid indigestion. Who wants to eat when they're nauseous? So Pepcid AC is one of the things that a lot of veterinarians recommend. You should check with your own veterinarian on anything medical, because your veterinarian knows your pet. But I'm just saying there are things like that that seem to be happening much more frequently now, where I'm getting so many people, not for dogs that won't eat because of a physical or physiological issue, but they won't eat for a behavioral reason. Very often, though, behavioral reasons actually stem from physical reasons. That's why veterinarian, if you don't have a vet you really love and can trust, ask around with your friends, because a very, very close friend of mine has a dog that actually was misdiagnosed and had very bad lab work come in. And they told her the dog was going to have to be put to sleep. Fortunately, she called me and told me, and I had her run up to the best vet hospital in the world. It's certainly in this country, and with the best, most amazing, all board certified to where I'm on staff as the behaviorist. This is sad, because if she had not called me, she would have had to put the dog to sleep. And it was from bad lab results. The lab had incorrect results, and it showed that this dog was basically dying. Well, needless to say, this was a couple of months ago. Dog's doing fine. She has some issues, but there's nothing that can't be, mitigated and worked with, and dog is doing great. So, when you have a dog who's a finicky eater, sometimes that can be a portender of other issues. So if your dog doesn't eat and it's like one meal here and there, or if your dog just kind of grazes, which is another thing when you guys are putting down the food bowl, just leaving the food in it, and then the dog, it stays out all day long. You don't even know. Forget about the behavioral aspect of it, where the dog can eat whenever it wants so it thinks it's in charge. More importantly, flies. There's flies in everybody's house. I don't care how careful you are. There's flies. A fly can easily land on your dog's dog food, deposit its eggs there. Your dog finally goes to eat the food, and now it ingests all that fly egg, and then it becomes larvae and worms. So, and you don't know what's going on until the worms come out the other end after you have your monthly wormer. So that's another reason. Also, make sure you wash your dog's bowls. It is important. Wash the dog's bowls frequently, water and food, both, because you want to make sure that you don't have any kind of parasites that get in that way. You also want to make sure that you don't have bacteria and all those things that, it, I mean, it's just so easy. When your dog's done eating, take the bowl, dump whatever is left, take the bowl, wash it well with hot soapy water, put it upside down, and then next feeding time, you can put your food there. The reason you put it upside down is so the flies don't land in it, especially this time of year. All right, we're going to move on to another reason that sometimes dogs have problems with eating. Weather and storms. Pretty common when you have bad weather, and especially in the Northeast right now, and we had just some in the South, where you start getting storms, you start getting hurricanes, you start getting lightning strike, you start getting thunder, and the barometric pressure changes and drops very rapidly. That can also signal a dog to not want to eat. So if you have a dog who's a finicky eater, and it's not, there's no physical cause that you can see, and there's no behavioral cause, it may be that your weather is going to be bad, or it may be that there's construction somewhere, and your dog hears that and thinks it's thunder coming. It may be fireworks. There are so many different things that it can be. The key is to watch for changes in eating habits, also changes in drinking habits, but I'll get to that in a moment. So if your dog has always been a great eater and suddenly he's not eating, that's not a good thing. He could have a fallen body, especially if you have a lab or a golden or, some of the dogs that tend to, pretty much put anything in their mouth and eat anything. Labs and goldens, you have to be really careful. And any of the doodles, it just seems like a lot of them do the same things. If a dog is always hungry, that's where those NuVet vitamins come in, and that's where making sure you're giving whole foods and a little bit of probiotic, because a dog can be taking in 2,000 calories a day, but if it's not processing it, then dog's either going to get fat or the dog is going to feel like it's still hungry, and that's why a lot of dogs eat foreign bodies. So a lot of the, from my anecdotal experience over 40-some-odd years, I have noticed that larger litters, dogs from larger litters tend to have more issues. Not all of them, but if you figure that the first six of the litter on a bitch who has eight nipples, the first six are going to be able to be fine. Anybody above that, especially when there's some that are a little smaller, a little later in birth order, even if they're larger, but they're later in birth order, a lot of times these animals wind up not getting enough colostrum during the first 24 hours, or they just can't, they keep getting pushed away from the nipple. Well, those dogs are not getting as much nutrition as the first strong six or seven or five, depending, again, of course, on the female and how much milk she's producing. So what you tend to see is when puppies are little, you'll see the difference, because you'll see within couple of days, like, wow, this one got a lot bigger than that one. Well, that means because this one's getting more probably of the nipple, unless it's failure to thrive puppy, meaning it's got something actually wrong with it. But a normal puppy, you can tell who's the one who's on the nipples more because they grow faster. Once you switch them, and once they start getting weaned about 6 weeks, which is about the earliest you should force it. I don't ever force it. I wait till mama decides that it's time, because she knows those puppies, even though I'm living in the box with them for the first 8 weeks. Mama knows what to do with her puppies. Mom always knows best. So if, let's say, mama is feeding them all and they all look equal, then mom's doing a great job. Our dogs, we breed Cavalier King Charles and Rhodesian Ridgebacks for a million years. And we see it where the mother, a good mother, will actually knock a bigger, fatter one off the nipple and nudge the weaker, smaller one onto the nipple. That's what a good mother does. That's what a really good mother does. Make sure that all of her babies are taken care of the same and that they all thrive. So let's say once they start going on to a slurry of food, or they start eating some softened food, their teeth are now in sufficiently by, 5 or 6 weeks. So now they can start even a little bit of crunching, but we make a slurry out of it. Now they're eating that, and now all of a sudden they start equaling out. and you see the puppies that were a little smaller are all evening out. Now, there'll still maybe be a slight difference, just individual difference, but it's really amazing. So that's because they're all able to eat as much as they need. And that's a great thing because clearly we want to make sure that each of those puppies makes it and gets enough food and enough nutrition, enough milk and colostrum when they need it so that they're able to thrive. So if you have the changes in eating habits of a dog, then let's make sure that you know why and get yourself to the vet. Start keeping a journal, which is the best thing you can do for 3 to 5 days. Just write everything down in the journal, and you will start to see patterns emerging. Like, oh, we had a thunderstorm today. Fluffy didn't want to eat. The next day, we had thunder in the morning, and Fluffy ate at night. And then the next day, he was fine, and he ate both meals. You'll start to see a pattern emerging if it is something from the environment. How about if it's a physical issue? Well, physical issues, let's say a foreign body, it ate something bad that's in there. Things can bounce around in your dog's stomach. If they're too big to go through the stomach, they can block the passageway from the stomach, like the duodenal area. They can actually block the bottom of the stomach or any part of the stomach. And if it's sharp, it can actually start necrosing or dying because it can cause infection and necrosing or dying of the tissue. So if you see something and your dog is just kind of off, I know people say, oh, vets are so expensive. But if you go to the vet, they do a radiograph of the dog's stomach and abdomen, and they go, oh, wow, your dog has something. Sometimes they can actually, like I know at Guardian, I know we have such an amazing team. They can actually go in with a scope and remove items very often so that the dog doesn't even need surgery. But once that item is already past the stomach, remember, the stomach is big. They can fit, you know, a tennis ball in their stomach, but that tennis ball isn't going to break down, nor is it going to pass through. So, you know, you have to look at it as if your dog is not acting right, the same as if your child isn't acting right. Don't wait. Because that's another thing people do all the time. They're, oh, I didn't think it was bad. He threw up a bunch, but then he stopped, and then he's just laying around. Well, yeah, that sounds like a foreign body. Or, you know, sometimes even dogs can flip their stomach. So just because it's not getting a lot worse doesn't mean you shouldn't be going to the vet. A good veterinarian, again, not every vet, like not every doctor is good, but make sure you're at a really good vet. Doesn't mean expensive, just means a good, very experienced vet who has really good accolades from your friends and neighbors, people who say, wow, this guy's great or this lady is fantastic. You need that. That's like having a good mechanic for your car. You know, you can spend a lot of money on fixing something and it's not done right. But then you have a second chance with it, you know, with a car. With an animal, if somebody messes up, you don't get that second chance. So it's very important. So eating habits, I think we're good on that. Now let's talk about a change in drinking habits. What can a change in drinking habits be caused by? Well, one thing is diabetes, especially as a dog gets a little older. If a dog suddenly doesn't want to drink and you are making sure that it is good, clear, clean water, it's not drinking out of some disgusting, dirty bowl or bucket, but it's clean. If your dog isn't drinking, that's actually more of a problem very often because that means that he's going to become dehydrated. And dogs can become dehydrated in 24 hours, sometimes even less. If they're vomiting, it can be and have diarrhea, it can be very quickly. Remember, if your dog is vomiting and has diarrhea, that's an emergency. Just get to your ER, get to your vet right away. Don't let them say, oh, yeah, we have an appointment next Tuesday when it's, you know, it's Thursday of the week prior because your dog isn't going to probably be alive by then. Then you'll need an ER. You have to be an advocate for your pet, too. Remember, they can't advocate for themselves. Just like special needs kiddos can't advocate for themselves, you need to advocate for your pet. So if there's a change in drinking habits, can also mean that they have a foreign body. But drinking, again, is important because once they stop drinking or they become dehydrated, even a little dehydrated, they usually start slowing down. Then they don't want to eat. They don't want to do much of anything. And then their blood levels and their, you know, urine output drops, their blood levels kind of get wonky. Don't wait. You know, it's have a good relationship with a good veterinarian that you know that if there's a problem, he or she will be there for you, and that it, and also have a second place in case you do have a problem. I use actually four different veterinarians because if one is away, I have another one that I know who it is. I don't just put all my eggs in one basket, as they say. So change in drinking habits, especially in the summer, if the dog, like it's, what's crazy is once a dog gets dehydrated, a lot of times it won't drink. So, and then they'll need to do either a bolus of liquid of, fluid under the skin, or they'll need to do an IV. Don't think that because your vet or emergency vet wants to start an IV on your dog that they're trying to rip you off. Very often, if a dog is in need of immediate fluid, you've got to get it in there. I've seen vets who will put cooler fluid in to cool the body temperature down, and I've seen vets, the same ones, who will warm the fluids up a little bit to, if the dog has hypothermia, they'll put a little bit warmer, not hot, but a little bit warmer fluid in to warm the body from the inside. There's so many things that we as lay people or you as lay people don't think of, but good veterinarian is worth their weight in gold. They will save your animal. And if you don't have the one that can do that, then time to find that one. Another thing is we start to see as dogs get older, as pets get older, that they start kind of slowing down. I'm going to talk about that in a moment after a quick break from our sponsors. But if you can think about it, we all are getting older. I'm going to go into that in a moment. So stay tuned. I will be right back with the show. And welcome back to the Pet Savant Unleashed. And I am unleashed, not unhinged, but unleashed. Okay, so we were talking before the break about dogs that are slowing down, pets that are slowing down. Now, of course, doing, you know, during aging and, you know, it's a natural progression of time. We all slow down. You know, when you start to hit your, you know, 30s into your 40s, you start slowing down. I just saw it very terrifying, especially for the ladies. Do you know when our bodies go through the most rapid aging process? This is scary. Beside, obviously, from, you know, conception to 9 or 10 years of age, that 10-year period. Between 45 and 55, is that scary? Because at 45, we're thinking, we got the whole world. We're just like middle of our life now. But between 45 and 55 years for a human, for a female, is your most rapid aging. So that's when you start getting the old crinkly lady skin. That's when you start slowing down. You don't feel as well. You have no energy. You're starting also on top of that going through menopause. All right, well, dogs go through stuff like that too. Not to the degree, but they do go through that. So depending on your breed and your breeder, if you have a really good breeder, and like I've been breeding for so long, my dog, I have a 14-and-a-half-year-old KK, Kayla, anybody who knows her, KK, she's 14 and a half. She still goes out. She's actually out with two young Ridgeback puppies that are going to be service dogs. 14 and a half years old. I have a 13, a 12 and a half, an 11, and a 10 and a half downstairs. And they're like puppies. They're in phenomenal shape. But my dogs don't die at 7 or 8 or 3, whatever. It's not just the breed, it's the breeder. If you're looking for somebody who is a good breeder, find out how long your dogs last. And don't say like, oh, well, how long do your dogs live? Say, can you tell me about some of the, you know, the older dogs that you've had? Tell me about them. Oh, yeah, well, I've had this one, this one, this one. I have had 16-year-olds. I had two sisters that were 16 when they passed. Their father was 16 and a half. With that, they don't live that long. But breeders have control over whom they breed to. And if you breed to the dog du jour and you go, wow, look at this one, Paul, this one's a champion. Well, all of my dogs are champions. But even if they're not champions, I don't look at the dog as far as what it wins. I look at how long has it lived, how long has its parents, its siblings lived. Genetics, yes, you can't control everything because certainly you can have one person in a family whose genetics are just different, who is not as strong or is stronger. But you can tend at least to look for animals that are purpose-bred for longevity, temperament, et cetera. It's not easy, but there are great breeders out there in every breed who breed like I do and who are very careful what they breed. They genetically test them. They run every test you can, so you're increasing your odds of having the best outcome on your litters. Yes, it's expensive, but if you're breeding dogs or cats and you're breeding them for the money, you are not a breeder. You are a puppy mill. Anybody who breeds them for money, that's your business, okay? You're not what we call a hobby breeder, who are the ones who breed for show, who breed for the love of the breed, for the love of the fancy, as we call it, the love of the sport. And we want those animals to live a long time. We want those animals to be healthy. We don't want somebody to ever call us and say, I had bought a few dogs from somebody who's a very good breeder. But guess what? One of them at 3 years old got lymphoma. And I'm not breeding. I actually spayed the other two. I am not going to breed them. The reason is, yes, they probably would be fine, but I don't need that. I don't want to have somebody have to go through that. Now, I have the best pet insurance in the world, so it fortunately only cost me about 10 or 15% of the total bill, but we're over $20,000. So it would have been, I think I've paid about $3,000 or maybe $4,000 of that. But that's another thing for another day, is pet insurance that we really, really need to make sure people understand pet insurance is very, very important, and there are a lot of different brands of that too. But anyway, for now, let's talk about that slowing down. So if you have a car, you would have what we would say like routine maintenance, right? You would, on a car, you would have things like an oil change, checking your fluids, rotating your tires, checking on your brake pads, your calipers, and getting new rotors or getting them ground down if you need, whatever it is. And we take care of our vehicles better than we take care of our pets, because what happens with our vehicle, oh, we can't get to soccer practice, or we can't get to the restaurant for the date. We can't get to church that morning. We can't go out on our vacation. Oh, I can't get to work because my car broke down. Well, when an animal can't do that and breaks down, we don't always take them that quickly to the vet. We don't always think of it the same way, but routine maintenance on a car is the same thing, exact same thing, as we should be doing, and I do, and many of you do, routine maintenance on your dog. That includes the blood work. That includes having them on a really good vitamin supplement, like the NuVet I mentioned. Having them on a little bit of probiotic, like a good either goat's milk or good Greek yogurt, that you have your dog just a little bit. Making sure that the dog isn't getting any allergens. You're not using chemicals on your floor that are causing cancers to start to build. Making sure that everything that your dog is eating is a good quality, and taking care of them when he needs to, like tires or toenails. You rotate your tires, but yet your dog's toenails are crunched under and grown under where the dog can't even move. And then you wonder, why does he have such bad arthritis? He's been walking on his heels for years because you didn't do the toenails. Ear infections are part of maintenance on a dog is preventing ear infections, especially if you have a down ear dog like a hound, which I have. All my dogs are hounds. The spaniels are all down ear dogs. German Shepherds, Huskies tend to have fewer ear issues because the air gets to them. But a dog that has the down ears, the floppy ears, will tend to have more ear infections just because their anaerobic bacteria can get in there too. Aerobic bacteria are the ones that live with using oxygen. Anaerobic, A-N-A-E-R-O-B-I-C, anaerobic bacteria, are the ones that can live without air, without oxygen. So if they can live without it, they tend to be more prevalent in dogs that have the down ears or dirty ears. So if your dog goes out and rolls around in the mud and everything, and you give him a bath, get in there and with a good ear wipe, or if it's not a dog that's likely to get oral hematomas from smashing its ears around when it's shaking its head, you want to put some kind of good drops in there. And that's a whole other story for another day. But properly maintaining your dog's ears is very important because ear infections can cause permanent hearing loss. They can cause tumors even because things get stuck there. When air can't get to something, it can start to cause ear infections. It can cause issues. You know, when you have a wound, sometimes we cover them, but then eventually your doctor will say, no, leave it open to the air, because the air will keep it dry and will also keep the bacteria from being able to kind of fester in there, such as the anaerobic. So we are, I don't know how it always happens, but we're almost done for the day. So some hot weather tips. If you have a dog with big hairball, when you go to the groomer, or you can do it yourself, from the sternum, from the bottom of the sternum, which is your xiphoid process, if you right now are going, hey, what the heck is that? On yourself, go between, at the bottom of your rib cage, between your either your breasts or your chest muscles, you know, there's that little spot where the ribs kind of come up towards your sternum, your breastbone. If you go from there, from that area, a 1 to 2 inch strip, depending on the size of your dog, down about a foot, or let's say 2/3 of the distance down to the dog's, if it's a boy, private part. And you will never see that. But this way, when your dog needs to lay down on something or a cooling mat, it can lay down and it's actually not going to overheat as much because it's got something that's going to be cool. You can get a cool mat. You want to make sure that if you do take your dog out somewhere, make sure you have good, clean water with you. The dogs in this weather need water on demand. Even if your dog is, let's say, you know, having incontinence issues, please make sure that it has access. Even if it doesn't, it's not a whole bucket, make sure it has access to some water. If it's a guzzler kind of dog that loves to just drown itself in water, you can give it, if it's a medium-sized dog, give it a half a cup at a time. If it's a larger dog, a cup at a time. A small dog, like a 10-pound dog, maybe give it a few ounces at a time. But the easiest thing to do is just to give it water so that it has that water. Again, I say water on demand. You have to talk to your veterinarian about that, but make sure that your animals are hydrated in this weather. And the last thing is, if you know you're going to be going outside, don't feed your dog right before or right after exercise. You remember when we were kids and our parents wouldn't let us go in the swimming pool and swim until a half hour had passed after we ate? Same thing with dogs. Don't give your dog a big meal and then he drinks a ton of water and then you let him run around because he's going to colic or bloat or flip his, torsion of the stomach, like gastric torsion, which is twisting or turning over of the stomach. All those things can happen, and especially in the heat when they tend to drink a lot more water, which is why I said you can kind of give them bits at a time, you know, enough, but regulate it a little more so they don't do that. Hence the Black Beauty story. Try to make sure that your meals, you can even make them a little smaller on the days you're going to be very active. And don't feed the bigger meal. Either feed it earlier in the morning so that the food is already in process by the time the dog goes out, or feed it later at night when you get home, you know, wait a half hour, an hour, the dog is calm, resting. There are things that you can do with that. You can give him a little snack during the day, just something little. Give him a few ounces of his food if it's a medium-sized dog. In other words, don't give, for those of you especially who are feeding one meal a day, don't give the dog so much food at one sitting that it's going to have a problem. So I can't believe it, but again, we are finished for today's show, and I just am so grateful to be here and share this time with you. Thank you so much. And remember, send in your questions, send in your comments. You can always email us through the BBS Radio, who is wonderful. And if you have any questions, we'll give you some phone numbers and all next time. Please be safe. Do the best you can with your pets and yourself. Stay cool. And make sure you enjoy your summer. Have a great day.